Get everything for your next project at Menards and save big money. We carry everything to help you breathe easier. Allergen air filters help prevent seasonal allergy symptoms and improve your indoor air quality by capturing microparticles while allowing maximum airflow. Save big on Allergen air filters when you shop at Menards. View the weekly flyer and all of our great deals happening this week on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Boston Red Sox beat the Rays in Game 2 of the matchup by a score of 3-1. Lucas Giolito gets the win as the Sox raise their record to 33 wins and 36 losses in a game that is very much the opposite of what we've been seeing as of late. I'm Nick the Voice, joined tonight by Terry Cushman Jr. and Chris Felico, and we are the Bastards of Boston. And if you want more, you can check us out at bastardsofbostonbaseball.com for great written articles posted just about every day. So, today was a delight, honestly. A very complete game from the pitching staff and from the defense for the most part. The offense left a few more opportunities on the table, as we've been used to, but it's hard to complain too much about a 3-1 win. What stuck out to you guys?
Go for it, Ter.
Well, glass half empty. We only scored 3 runs. 2 of them were Roman Anthony. It was fun to watch. His family was there. That's all good. Glass half full. I did not expect that performance out of Lucas Giolito. So it feels like a good win. It feels like a productive win. And Giolito doesn't pitch at home very well. He's only had one real good start. I think it was against Baltimore. Typically, his better starts are on the road. So it was nice to see. And it's also nice to see Giolito bounce back from a bad start. He lasted, 1 1/3, 1 2/3. He didn't get through 2 innings the last time. He just got absolutely destroyed and out of the game. So there wasn't much reason to believe he was going to give you that performance tonight, but he did. 6 full innings, only 3 hits. Just looks good. Yeah. And I just want to say before I kick it over to you guys, like, I want Lucas Giolito to end up being a good signing. I want this to be a success story because he had so many obstacles. Like, number one, he's coming back from the bracing procedure. There's not a lot of data on that. It was only a 1-year turnaround from the surgery. Typically, it's 14 to 18 months for regular Tommy John. So it's just a big mystery. Can the starting pitcher really, you know, have the bracing procedure come back? And he's had no ill effects. He's been a horse, even in his bad starts. I mean, he's still up there 80, 90 pitches or so at least. So that's nice to see. And then as far as the performance aspect, it hasn't been consistent, but he has sprinkled in some really quality starts, and he hasn't been good since 2021. So if we can just get consistent here with him, kind of get him firing on all cylinders, man, he's a number 2 or a number 3 pitcher if all goes well. And I love seeing it tonight.
Yeah, I think, you know, to your point, Terry, it's encouraging because I never really thought about it that way, that he really hasn't shown any signs, Giolito, of the injury bothering him since he came back, which, I mean, that's a glass half full. And it's funny because, like, I talked at nauseam yesterday about the fact that, like, the wins over the weekend were not sustainable. And then we get a 3-1 win, which is a lot, you know, on paper, a lot more sustainable, but, like, it also begs the question, can we really sustain Giolito being the guy that we need him to be? I hope he is. I want him to be. There's no one that, why, like, all of us want him to be one of the guys. And if he could be our 3 starter, like, we're in good shape. You know, now we're starting to cook with gas. The question is, can it be sustained? You know, a lot of what happened tonight on paper, very encouraging. But is it sustainable? Can you count on the Sox to start winning games 3-1, 4-2, 5-3 on a consistent basis? To this point, we haven't been able to, but you know what? Who knows? Like, is this the start of something? I'd like it to be. I'd feel a hell of a lot better if we'd won yesterday. But yeah, I mean, the only way, time will tell.
Most definitely. You know, I said last night that in order for the Sox to really stay even just in the conversation of competitiveness, we needed every single guy on the roster to be the best possible version of themselves that they could be. And tonight, Lucas Giolito was exactly that. 3 walks, 3 hits in 6 innings. You'll love to see that. He did have that one bad inning. It was the circus of the fifth. He was so focused on the base runner. He walked that one guy. I forget his name. Very fast guy on the Rays. And everyone knew that he was going to be a threat to steal, Giolito included. And he looked so caught up with the fact that there was a runner over there. He was trying to pick him off. He was pitching out, trying to get Narvaez to throw him out. And it just didn't work. And it ended up really costing us almost. He gave up another, a walk after that, and then turned around and did his best Bernardino impression and chucked that ball right into center field. And I was like, oh no, you know, here we go. But despite that, you know, ultimately, funnily enough, his ERA goes down drastically just because he has 0 earned runs, even though the error is on him, which is kind of silly. But it was nice to see because he settled down after that. Only 1 run scored. It could have been a total meltdown inning, a total disaster. And instead, he not only escaped the fifth, he came out and he pitched a good sixth. There wasn't a ton of swing and miss stuff tonight, although he had a couple strikeouts that were real nasty. I think it was Aranda turn around in the fourth inning, and he struck out looking, and he like was barking at the ump, and that ball was absolutely in the zone. So it's nice to see Giolito be able to come out, have pitches that can fool guys, have pitches that can fool good hitters at the end of the day. The Rays offense is nothing to sneeze at. And then on the backs of that, Whitlock comes out, looks excellent. 2 innings, vintage Whitlock, 3 Ks. Weissert comes out, gets the save, the first one of the season. I'm not sure if that might be the first one of his career. I'm not sure about that, but it's possible. Just a very clean game from the pitching staff. And I agree with you, Chris, that this is more sustainable than trying to score 10 runs every time. And I think the answer to whether this team can continue to do it is ultimately going to go up to the starting pitchers. If we can fortunately take Thursday, which is a day off, and have our rotation just focus on giving us 5 innings of competitive baseball, or even just 5 innings in general. The bullpen pieces that we have, especially when Slayton comes back, the bullpen pieces that we have are good enough to win. You have Chapman, you have Weissert, you have Whitlock and Slayton, you have Wilson, you have Guerrero now. These are nice bullpen pieces. The offense is showing some life again tonight, 1 for 9 with runners in scoring position, driving me batty. But overall, this was a much more complete victory than the Red Sox has shown us in a long, long time, quite frankly. Now, what stuck out to you guys about the offensive performance in general, or the relief staff, any of the guys I just mentioned?
Well, the offense, you want to see Roman Anthony have a moment. And, you know, he came up to the plate. I don't have the inning in my notes. Fairly early in the game, runners on second and third. And he was kind of battling a little bit. And there was a ball on the outside of the plate, and he just simply shot it the other way. And Lou Maloney pointed out that he had already seen that pitch in the at-bat. And, you know, obviously, you know, didn't make contact. And then the second time around, he was ready for it. And he just shot it up the opposite field line, left field, and 2 runs came in easily. And Trevor Story put up another run, and we should probably talk about him shortly. But really the 2 that Anthony gave you was all that you needed, really, because the Rays only scored 1. So that was a big moment. And I'm just hoping that, you know, with his presence and hopefully he thrives, the league will adjust to him, you know, in a couple of weeks and start attacking him a little bit differently. But you just hope that his presence in this lineup is going to help Campbell elevate and hopefully dig out of his slump. And then I don't think Meyer's really been that bad, but hopefully they just all kind of thrive off each other. And they had that shot yesterday with all three of them kind of hanging out before the game had started. And it was cool to see. They're all finally here.
Yeah, I think, rather than me echo everything Terry just said, because I mean, that's the reality of the offense tonight. There really wasn't much. Anthony had his moment. Story had a moment. I think what's interesting, and it goes back to a point that you actually made, Nick, and I'm sorry that I didn't touch on it before, was, you know, the Sox this season, when you had Lucas Shealy to throw the ball in the center field and then Campbell dropped that ball that we all thought he was going to catch, like that would be the beginning of an implosion and we probably lose that game. Like that turns into a crooked number. They either tie it, take the lead, and then we're fighting, we're pressing, and we maybe never come back, or we tie it and then lose in extra innings. So it was encouraging to see that we at least won this game and didn't let that get out of control, and that Giolito was able to shake off that poor decision. That's one. I think, you know, looking at some of the comments that Cora made before the game, I think what's going to be interesting about this offense is it looks like, you know, all the kids, Meyer and Anthony are not going to be getting starts with lefties. And in heading into the Yankee series, it looks like they're going to have three lefties in that series. So what's going to happen with Meyer, what's going to happen with Anthony, I think should be interesting, because to Terry's point, I think it's a benefit having Anthony up here for Campbell, specifically Meyer, because I think he would have been the guy that had all the pressure in this offense to try and turn things around before Anthony became the guy. So I really see it to being a benefit for him. Because, yeah, to Terry's point, he hasn't been horrible. He hasn't been great. He's kind of just been even-keeled. Campbell started off so darn hot that, like, now he's super cold in comparison. But I think you almost have to play Anthony, even when you don't want to, because he is going to be the talk of every series that this team goes into for at least the next month, possibly two, depending on how well he elevates his game and makes the adjustments that are necessary, because he's number one prospect in baseball. He's now on the big league team. Sox theoretically are trying to, quote unquote, chase a playoff spot in that third wild card. And we're going up against a lot of teams that we haven't faced that have never seen this kid, obviously. So I don't think it's like, even if he's not doing well, it is to their benefit to have him up there and let him be the focus, even if it's somewhat to a detriment just for the rest of the guys that kind of need like a little bit of a breather and the focus off them.
Definitely. You know, when it's interesting because the broadcast tonight was talking a little bit about the lefty righty split. And it's true that we do have two certified lefty killers in the form of Rob Refsnyder and Romy Gonzalez. These are guys who have historically performed very well versus left-handed pitching, and they continue to do so this year. So I understand that you need to get those guys in the lineup. My hesitance comes at, prior to this past week, I would have easily said, why is Meyer sitting when Story is in the lineup? But, you know, Story's having a bit of a resurgence, and like Terry said, we can talk about him in a little bit because that's the elephant in the room, but almost in a pleasant way for right now. But it's interesting, you know. Today's game really was very nice defensively, which is nice given all of the mistakes that we've made. Because you mentioned Campbell going up and getting that ball. I didn't get a great angle on that. I wish that we saw it from a different perspective. But it almost looked like that was a ball that could have gone over his head and could have gone into center field and tied the game. So the fact that he at least was able to swat it down and keep the damage to just one run, I thought that was very heads up. Similarly, early in the game, Duran made a sliding attempt at a catch, but the ball sort of glanced right off his glove, and it wasn't scored as an error, which I agree with, ultimately, just because it was a very difficult ball to actually reach at all. After that, though, the outfield looked very, very nice. Giolito getting bailed out in the sixth, they gave up some hard contact, but Roman Anthony making great defensive plays out there, Zidane Rafaela continuing to be himself, Duran continuing to be himself. We need this team to cut the silly mistakes and be the gold glove caliber defense that we all know it could be. Obviously, at short and second, there are some question marks, but the corners should be a strength in theory. The outfield and catcher should be a massive strength. So we just need to focus on the fundamentals more and more and just make sure that we're playing good baseball. We saw before I handed over to you guys, there was one thing I noted, which was Sadon Rafaela, I think it was, he had that very heads-up base running where, you know, Duran, I think it was, sort of popped up into the outfield and it looked like it was going to be caught by, I mean, there were three defenders around it and no one got it. You know, the Rays, funnily enough, defensively, just based off this series, have been looking a lot like us. They're making silly mistakes. And so that was a circus. But really, if Rafaela didn't like count on that, if he played that like a routine pop-up, that would have been an out. And instead it got two men on. So we just need to play more heads-up baseball, more good baseball, more complete baseball. And at the end of this stretch, we might have a shot.
Real quick, I just want to mention one other thing about Giolito. His three worst starts, his second start of the season against Texas, 3 2/3 innings, 6 earned. Two starts later against the Atlanta Braves. This was at Fenway, I think. Yeah, at Fenway. Only went 4 innings, gave up 6. And then two starts ago, the one before tonight, 7 earned against the Anaheim Angels. And all of his other starts since then, let me count them. Looks like, I guess it's only, what, 4 starts? Something like that. 8 starts. So in the 5 other starts out of those 8, what do you think his ERA is? Just guess.
Well, considering it's like 30 between those 3, I'm going to say 3.5.
Nick. Yeah, I'd say 3.5.
1.5.
One and a half. Oh my goodness.
If you take out those 3 real bad ones, 1.5.
You got the 30 ERA out of those 3 starts, I guess.
No kidding.
Because take out he's had 2 scoreless, and then he's had another one. Yep. He only gave up 1 earned. So that it just jacks way down. So yeah. So I mean, most of that's been on the road. He has had 2 good ones. Let's see, 13. He went 7 at home against Baltimore. 6 tonight. So that's 13 very good innings at home. So I hope this trend continues. And then the other thing I want to mention real quick on Anthony before we move on. I'm bummed that he changed his number. Like 19. So many guys have had 19. I think Josh Beckett might have had it. Jackie Bradley had it for a while. And I get it. They want the lowest number possible. And that's just the way it's always been. I really liked 48. Now I know that was Sandoval's number, so maybe it was a little dirty, but I think like 35 through 59, cause I think 60 and above is typically for the minor leaguers. 35 through 59. It's just underrated. I just like it when guys take numbers in that range, you know? I mean, cause if he crushes it, how many other great 48s have there been? There might have been one or two. That's so Mookie Betts was number 50. And I think Cutter wears it now, and that's fine. I mean, he's not disgracing it by any means, but just before Mookie, there was just no 50. I like that. I really like that. So I don't know.
Yeah, I don't mind a little variety. It's funny, you know, because a friend of mine pointed out the Pablo Sandoval thing, too. And I joked with him. I said, it's possible that Pablo Sandoval might actually be the first ever player to get their number retired because they were bad rather than good. You know, like it's just dirty. Roman has one bad game wearing that number. And they're like, no. Hold on. We're going to change it. You know, it's sort of like Bregman shaving his mustache, you know.
Well, it's funny. I just Googled it. So there's only like 3 players that are Hall of Fame worthy that have ever worn 48. Can you take a guess?
I'm so bad. Nick might even be better than me. Yeah.
All right. So we got Torrey Hunter, Lee Smith, and Jacob DeGrom.
Wow.
Oh, okay. Okay. I thought we were just going Red Sox only.
Oh, no. I meant in Major League Baseball.
Okay.
It's a short list, too.
See, he should have kept the damn number.
Yeah.
You know what, though? He looked at it the other way, Terry. He was looking at it. There's been so little success with that number. He did not want to jinx himself. That's how
that's true. He needs everything going for him, you know, when you're the number one prospect in baseball.
I'll take more Fred Lynn.
Yeah.
I'm trying to get number. This
Jackie
is
Bradley Jr., I think, wore 19 in Koji Uehara, right?
I think 19. Koji.
I know Beckett had it for sure.
I'm so bad with the numbers.
Yeah, I used to be good, but now I'm not as good. Hang on, I'm almost there. All right, number 17. Bad radio, people. Not having.
I know. See, this is what happens when the Red Sox win.
We got to scramble for nice things.
Well, you know, one thing while you look for that, I can say, talking about Meyer, it really feels to me that it's just a matter of time before his power really comes alive. Because tonight, he actually, in two different at-bats, he had two real nice swings where he fouled out just to the right of the pesky pole. You know, it broke at the end both times. But, I mean, beautiful swings, great contact. It had the distance, certainly, just the wrong angle. So I really feel like Meyer is like one of those guys who he's going to get hot at some point, and he's going to be dangerous. And in the meantime, I mean, his defense is just smooth over there. He looks natural.
Yeah, and he doesn't look lost. I mean, I like his makeup at the plate. I like his body language. You could tell he's trying to figure it out. One guy I don't like at the plate right now, and we've talked about him quite a bit, is Christian Campbell. He's just bad body language. He looks anxious. He doesn't look relaxed. I just don't like it. And he is showing signs of figuring it out, but I mean, I won't be comfortable until, you know, he's all the way there. I had someone earlier, I should have wrote it down. Like, he reminded me of someone, and it was a really bad thing. And, but I think Meyer and Anthony, they're just a little bit more poised, and ironically, the two that didn't sign extensions, but it is what it is. And real quick with the numbers, I finally got it. So I'm not going to count Newcomb and Pablo Reyes or Sawamura, but yeah, Jackie Bradley Jr. had it for quite a while. Then Koji,
yep.
Then Josh Beckett, and then you're kind of going back a ways. So I thought it had been tossed around a little bit more. I thought there might be one or two more people. I'm trying to go back. Wow, there just really wasn't any super great ones. I'm like in the 80s right now.
That's really funny.
Steve Lyons had it. Fred Lynn had it. So you got to go all the way back to Fred Lynn. Yeah. So
what did Mo Vaughn wear? Mo Vaughn was 42.
Okay. So yeah, he had, that was Jackie's number. Jackie Robinson.
Before
it was retired. Yeah.
That's and then
the last guy to wear it, obviously, Mariano, which was cool. Yeah. Definitely. You know, I didn't think I'd give a Mariano take tonight, but he's the one Yankee I just truly like. You know, I like him. And when it was looking like he had a really good shot to be the first unanimous guy, I just thought, you know, that was so awesome when he got it. And
I was thrilled for that. Yeah.
You can go on YouTube and watch the call. It's a good one. But let's get into Trevor's story real quick. So a couple Fridays ago, I was at the Braves game in Truist Park, which is really good, by the way. I tweeted out on Twitter. I still call it Twitter. Very classy organization. There was one inning. It was like the third or fourth inning. And, usually the music plays in between while the commercials are going on TV. And, they're switching from offense and defense. And they played for a minute or so, not the full song, but for at least a minute and a half, they played Sweet Caroline. And then on the big screen, they were only showing Red Sox you know, fans. So I thought, wow, that's classy. They don't do that at Fenway. And I'm not saying Fenway should, but
that's cool.
When you don't expect it, it's yeah, it's a cool thing. So cool place to go if anyone ever gets the chance. That's only my fourth ballpark, by the way. I'm embarrassed to say that. You know, Fenway, obviously, Miller Park, and then Wrigley. So I've been to the two most historic ones, but
that's nice.
But anyway, the thing I was getting at there. So Trevor Story just out of nowhere. I mean, there was tons of DFA talk that week, and out of nowhere, I'm sitting down basically field level, kind of out in left field, but it was a nice section because the seats were faced inwards though, towards the pitcher's mound and home plate. And really wide seats, the ones we had on Saturday. I mean, I'm not like skinny. I'm a lot lighter than I used to be, but just you're crunched in there. So it was a nice section to sit in. And Story was up, and I'm like, oh, well, this is going to be useless. I don't remember what the count was or anything like that. No one was on base. And, actually, I do remember it. And I remember telling Justin, my friend that I went with, I was like, well, if he strikes out here, at least we're getting – at least get it out of the way and then get to your better hitters next inning and get something going. And then all of a sudden, just the crack off the bat, and that ball was launched. And it felt like it was directly over our heads, but it obviously wasn't because it would have been in foul territory, but it went almost right over us. And I'm like, you just knew it was gone. And it was. And we did win that night. I don't remember what the score was, but it was a solo shot. And that really was the turning point for Story. I mean, ever since, I mean, he's hitting well over 300. I felt like he was walking a little bit more than he was, but in the last 2 weeks, he's only got four walks. But he just looks so much better at the plate. He's not whiffing nearly as much by the looks of it. But in the last 2 weeks, he's hitting .273 with a .322 on base. And then in the last week, he's obviously been on fire. Two home runs, one of them tonight as an insurance run. And he's hitting .357 with a .400 on base. So seven strikeouts and 28 at bats. So that's still a 25% clip. Not, you know, you're not in Bobby Dalbec territory with that, but ideally you want to be 20% or less. So hopefully he figures it out, but it's almost annoying. I'm like, oh, we almost got rid of you, but you know, he is coming through when we need him to.
Absolutely. You know, what was really reassuring about Story's night tonight was I was complaining last night about how a lot of his base hits were sort of like singles up the middle, and they were nice hits, but it's something you could have a shift kill pretty easily, right? Tonight, that was not the story. You know, a nice line drive, a great, just monstrous home run right over the monster. And that was good to see. Just good contact. His exit velocity is up, I think, just on the season in general. So he's at least hitting the ball hard. And when you hit the ball hard, good things will happen. Yeah, like you said, over the last 15 games, I mean, he woke up. And so I am really, really hoping it's for real, because like I said last night, like I said before, we really need every guy on this roster to be the best possible version of themselves they can be.
Yeah, it was encouraging. And I think it was meaningful, because I think the way that this game was going, like it doesn't seem like it's a solo shot, but like that solo shot proved to kind of feel like the death knell for the Rays at that point. The way we were pitching, they really weren't getting much traffic on the bases after, you know, that fluky inning. Where I felt like, okay, like we have a little bit of breathing room, which is not something you could normally say as a Red Sox fan in 2025 with a 2-run lead, specifically in Fenway. So yeah, it's good to see. It's definitely been a pivotal turning point since you mentioned Terry, where I got to be honest, like I thought by now, you know, he's done this, right? Where he has a series, kind of fades away, has another good series, and then just kind of dissipates, and then it'll take him 3 weeks to even get a hit, let alone actually, you know, make meaningful contact. So it's been good to see. I do want to bring up something as a little bit of a, I don't want to say cause for concern, but someone that I think is starting to kind of trend in the wrong direction, someone that we've all been kind of high on, Carlos Narvaez. I would say in like the last six games, I want to say he's got like 9 strikeouts. but like a lot of strikeouts with runners in scoring position, and some like weaker at bats. He's been fluky because he's had a home run here or there. He had a big one in the Yankees series. But do you think, because I will say that in that time frame, we've kind of reintroduced Wong into the lineup a lot more often than we had been prior. What are your guys' thoughts?
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, when you look at the sample sizes, 7, 15, 30 games, the numbers look good, you know, but you're right. The strikeouts are a concern. In the last 30 games, he's going to strike out a game, pretty much, is how you can paint it. And it is a bit tough to count on a rookie. I mean, I love his swing. I love his approach. And I love the doubles. I love the home run. But it really does strike me as like one of those things where you wouldn't put Anthony in the four slot. You wouldn't put Meyer or Campbell in the four slot. They tried with Campbell and it didn't work. And I think a lot of people are just forgetting this guy's a rookie. Give him some breathing room. You know, being in a high leverage situation nonstop is not necessarily where I want my 26-year-old catcher.
Yeah. I think before you say anything, Terry, I think the other thing too is outside of the Yankee series, like when you remove that, his walks are down quite a bit in that same time, actually probably in the last 2 weeks. And that was something that I was very impressed with him, because he was averaging almost a walk, close to a walk a game in those first 30 games. Yeah, I don't know. It's just, and it might not be that big of a deal. It could just be a little bit of a rough patch. It's just, I would hate to, for him to kind of like just completely plateau off, especially with the start that he got. And he's, right now, he looks like the best rookie out of the four that we have so far. So what are your thoughts, Ter?
So in the last week, I mean, he's hitting 250 with a 400 on base. He's driven five walks in the last week, so that's good. But where he hasn't looked so good in the last week is he's got 9 strikeouts. So striking out almost 50% of the time, 9 times in 20 at-bats. So, you know, he's just kind of a bonus. I mean, nobody – I vaguely remember acquiring him, and it was the same day we traded for Garrett Crochet. And at that point, I'm still like, well, Wong's my catcher. And, what we've really gotten out of Narvaez is just a good bonus. But, and Wong, how many runs do you think he's driven in? We're in June now. How many runs for the year?
For the year?
One.
One, yeah. Last night.
I feel like it was last night. It was his first RBI, yeah.
He grounded into a double play, but Meyer came home on it, and so he gets a run. So anyway, but with Narvaez, I mean, we don't know what he is. I mean, in the first 2 weeks, we thought Campbell was like the next coming. We were already trying to retire his number, you know, and put it up there next to Pedro. And so I don't know what he is, but the defense alone is elite. And as all these other guys, you know, as hopefully Anthony ascends and Meyer ascends and, Devers and Duran are doing their thing. And Rafaela has looked pretty good in a few games. He hasn't gotten a ton of, love, I guess. But I just feel like the more other guys are stepping up, the less pressure is going to be on Narvaez and the better he's going to do. I don't like him in the four hole. I know it's been out of necessity and I get it. You know, he was hitting like 360 for a short stretch. And so Cora likes to ride the hot hand, but yeah, but I don't like Toro in the three hole either. And that's what we've got the last couple of nights.
Yeah. The line's been very odd the last couple of nights, but the one thing I will say, I don't know what Narvaez is, but I know what he wasn't, and that's a question mark, right? And this team has so many damn question marks between injury and then just the moves that have transpired, lack of performance. And I think, especially coming off of getting rid of Kyle Teal, to your point, like, yeah, we didn't expect Narvaez to be what he's been this far. But the fact that he was, like, it was a nice added bonus. And the fact that we're like, all right, maybe we kind of do have a catcher. We don't really have to worry about that since we have 9 million other gaping holes we have to fill in this lineup and pitching staff. So that's why, like, it would be good if he could just at least plug one of the holes at this point.
Yeah, it's funny because if you look at our lineup, you know, I agree. I don't like Narvaez or Toro in the 3-4 slot, but who else do we have? If you look at the lineup, it really just is 8 question marks and Rafael Devers. You know, Duran, there were questions about him coming into the season. Would he replicate the success? The answer is no, but he's been heating up. Toro is not an 891 OPS hitter. I mean, who is? You know what I mean? But you play him while he's hot, and that's kind of the thing. You play him, you play Narvaez, you hope that Campbell can turn it around. He's been, you know, decent in the last 15 games. You hope Story and Rafaela can keep doing what they've been doing. Rafaela's last month in particular has been really strong, and it feels like even outside of that month, he's been really strong. So it really is one of those situations where this is not a 2004 Red Sox championship if we get there. Like, let's say, hypothetically, we go on and we win the World Series by some miracle, right? This is not a 2004-style championship. This is a 2013-style championship. This is just a bunch of dudes who, in this case, in the middle of the season, decided, you know what? I'm going to play excellent baseball. And that's pretty much what we're counting on to get there. But
I would say we'll 2000.
Right now, they're doing it, so
2007 is what I feel like, because you had Pedroia called up that year for the first time. Ellsbury was in Double A in July, and then the center fielder in the World Series. So those are kind of the vibes I get. And then Buehler and Crochet are kind of like your Beckett and Schilling in a way. And I don't know. I stand corrected. Apparently, you do not get credited for a run batted in. If you hit into a double play.
I never knew that.
Right. A couple of people have come at me with that.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Well, you know, to your credit, Terry, I know that they did say on the broadcast as soon as it happened, they're like, that was his first RBI.
Yeah, I remember that too. That's
the only reason I was like, oh, yeah, you're right, because I do remember them saying it. So they didn't know that either.
That's okay. Hilarious.
Dude. So what?
It's not even funny. It's just sad.
It's June and Wong doesn't even have one then. And secondly, one of the guys that pointed it out, he's in the stream right now, Rise Above It. He says, appreciate this so much. Appreciate y'all doing this. I'm glad I get a breakdown on this, being that I live in North Dakota and he gets a lot of Minnesota sports. So number one, I'm shocked North Dakota even has internet. I've never met anyone from North Dakota.
Never met anyone from North Dakota.
No, I did. This is the first for me. And like one guy told me this back in the day, and it, you know, it kind of messed with me a little bit. He goes, have you ever met anyone from North Dakota? I was like, no. He goes, does North Dakota even exist? And I'm like, does it? I don't know. Maybe it's some, you know, maybe it's like a Area 51 type place. But anyway, so good. I'm glad that we extend into the obscure parts of the lower 48. And yeah, so the stream's been super busy. See, I think we're not as active tonight, and I think it's because people come at they tune in when they want to rage because they know we're going to be there.
Oh, yeah. You're a good venting podcast. We're
everyone's like healthy therapy session where they just get to like scream in their own head and we're just complaining the whole time. But listen, credit to Rise Above It, because if I was going to like try and steal internet and tap into the grid to do it, it would not be to watch the 2025 Boston Red Sox. So God bless your soul.
Absolutely. You know, it's really nice just to see a lot of recurring names in the chats as well. We're doing this on Restream, so we have the YouTube chat, the Twitter chat all up sort of merged. And, you know, we're happy to have you guys join us. Honestly, we're happy that we can provide some value in this sports community that, you know, at some times, I remember before I even joined, you know, like Twitter, I call it Twitter too, where before I created my sports Twitter this year, I would like every now and again go into like sports forums across Reddit or some other sites, and it would just like be like either complete ridiculous doom and gloom, people coming out with the most ridiculously negative takes you can imagine, or it's like blind optimism, like I'm crazy because we're 3 games under 500 and I'm pissed off. Yeah. So I feel like we can strike a little bit of a balance here. You know, we call the Red Sox out when they're losing and losing badly. But I mean, when guys are playing well, what are you going to say? Credit where credit's due.
Yeah, I think I've addressed this on previous episodes, but you know, so many of us say that we thrive on negativity and we root for the team to lose, but that's not true, because the better the Red Sox do, the more numbers we pull in. And last year we had a bad down year because everybody checked out early. You know, your ace was supposed to be Giolito. I don't think that was going to work out well. It's taken a while into this season to start working out well, but you just had no rotation. We were being sold on Houck and Crawford, and for a little while that was actually really good. And then July happened and we fell out of it. And so if the team gets better, and we're three games under still, and who knows, we don't know which way it's going to go, but you know, if we start winning, we get bigger. And that's what we want. That's what we're rooting for. So we want to go back to October and not just limp in and then lose right away, but get in and go deep, you know?
Oh, absolutely.
That would be amazing. Like, this podcast took a massive step forward in October of 2021. Like, that's the first time in a month we ever exceeded 30,000 downloads. And we do that fairly regularly now, but it was a big thing and it was cool. And it was a team that had absolutely no business whatsoever really being in the playoffs. And they all just stepped up. Kike stepped up. Verdugo had a decent month. Xander actually probably had his best postseason of his career that year after being pretty lackluster. Vasquez had a couple of big moments. Just, it was a next man up type thing. And our rotation, I mean, you had Evaldi and Erod, and you know, Erod's a big game guy, so he pitched okay. And you know, you were kind of patchworking it after that. But Pivetta, you know, nobody really knew what he was. He started off great in the year, then he sucked, and then he got sent to the bullpen, and then you know, he was great as a long guy. But anyway, so yeah, that's just kind of the behind the scenes thing. I mean, we're pulling for this team, and tonight was fun. And if we can just quietly get above 500, if we get above 500, we got to go get a first baseman. You know, yeah. It's not going to be Rhys Hoskins at this point, because the Brewers are just out of their minds right now, and they're probably not going to sell off anyone. But you got to get a first baseman. And
if Romy and Toro keep doing what they're doing, you know, that's a fine platoon. I would not be opposed. I mean, I've been a big Ryan O'Hearn guy this season. You know, I would love if the Orioles would part with him. He's a free agent at the end of the year, so
do it.
I'm riding with Romy until he tells me we can't.
Yeah, I mean, he's not going to be the everyday guy. I'm not a Toro guy. I mean, he could go off for the next week, hit a walk off. I'm still not going to be a Toro guy. He doesn't walk, and as soon as the league catches up with him, it's going to be over.
That's what I'm afraid of too.
And Romy can be the platoon guy on the bench. And I was going to rant about Hamilton, but I'll save that for another night. you know, Alex Cora is like a little league manager. Everyone gets to play. And if there wasn't an ice cream machine in the clubhouse, I would assume that he goes and buys everyone after the game. But Romy, I mean, there is a place for him. He seems to be hitting lefties pretty well, but I want an everyday guy. And Romy can play second base too, don't forget. So you can sneak him in there. You know,
that's Devers. True. And Toro's looked all right at third, honestly.
He has, yeah.
Yeah. And tonight, actually, too, he made another one of those great stretch out plays. You know, Story's throw went a little wild. I forget when it was. I think it was fairly early in the game. And Toro really, I thought it came off the bag, but, you know, there was no challenge. So, yeah, it's tough to do. I mean, I don't understand how these first basemen, like, they're usually such big guys, and then they pull out these ballet-style splits and all this crazy stuff. You know, they kill me just watching.
I don't know what Delfino's drinking habits are, but he's just riffing them in the stream, just kind of hanging out with the other guys. Romy is my homie, he says. No sorrow really for Toro. Maybe he raps. I don't know. I'm trying to like figure it out in my head. Like, what's
he gave us nicknames? I mean, Nick already had one, but you got Terry the Cush Cushman.
Yeah,
Mad Dog Filico. This is getting wild.
That's funny.
Yeah, yeah.
We should probably go to probable pitchers, but before we do, I just wanted to float an idea. One half serious, the other a complete joke. But I was laughing with my friend about how last night, you know, I talked about how we need starting pitching. Like, another guy to go with Crochet would be invaluable at this point, a surefire starter. And a lot of teams who have those are contending. So, you know, you're not going to get the Mariners to give you a guy who's worth a damn. But I was thinking, how funny would it be? We go out, we say, you know what? Three aces, throw them out. Just a Chris Sale, Nathan Eovaldi reunion. That would be so ridiculous, but
I'll take Eovaldi. There's just something about Chris Sale that I just don't trust. You know, Eovaldi
still got 3 years, unfortunately. So I don't think the Rangers, that would be kind of a punt move for them.
Well, they're taking Story if that's the case. But
yeah,
I've got an interesting guy that you could definitely buy low right now that still has quote unquote upside. And I was actually listening to a podcast or show. I forgot what this morning. I was doing so many damn things. But Sandy Alcantara, I know he's having a rough season. I know.
That's scary.
But he does have a lot of upside. We've talked about him in the past when he was doing better. But there was someone who – I forgot who used to be on that team that's not anymore, that's now on the Mets. But he was basically saying that, like, Sandy right now is just so checked out playing for the Marlins. Like, he doesn't care. And he doesn't care if he goes out there, gets lit up, that he just is waiting for them to trade him and hopefully do a contender. Like, cause he just wants to play meaningful baseball. Now, obviously I don't know if Boston's the right place for him at this point, but
it's an interesting theory and, something I'd be interested at maybe looking into, because if that is the case, I imagine at this point, his value is pretty much as low as it could possibly get.
Well, that's my point.
How much leverage could the Marlins really have? You throw him out there, you see if he turns it around. If not, he's kind of a safe DFA in that regard.
I mean, his career at ERA is 3.57, even with this absolute dog crap of a season. So, and I think he's got to be over 7 at this point.
I think so. Yeah, it's
7.14.
Bad.
So even with 7.14, his next highest mark was 4.32 when he was a rookie. So I don't know. It's just a thought.
Is Andrew Bailey going to fix him though? Is where I'm at, but
maybe he fixes Andrew Bailey.
That would be amazing. But we'll see. We got the rest of the season to rage on about him. One other thing though, we're talking about, you know, acquisitions and all that. Bregman could be back if we can just go on a nice little run here, you know, just get above 500. You don't have to run away with it. You get him back, that solves the Toro problem. And one other guy you could possibly acquire, it would require Devers going to first, but you could possibly get Luis Robert. Not a lot of this might be his walk year, if I'm not mistaken.
The problem with him is just, has he ever had a healthy season?
Well, you're rolling the dice for a couple months. That's all. And it could be amazing. And he's got all the incentive to come to Boston and just absolutely rake.
Yeah. Obviously, when we get to the end of the month, we'll know where we are and we'll know where the market is, hopefully. So we can start to do some more in-depth speculation. But for right now, I know that if we got Chris Sale, he would probably get into a freak accident on his way to the stadium just because that's how his Boston career went. But I say, let's go for it. We got a great guy down in AAA named Vaughn Grissom. I think the Braves would love him. Just a 1-1, you know, clean. I think that's a great trade right there.
Yeah.
Hopefully there was no backsies clause in that trade. I don't know.
I wonder if Chris Sale has like a problem with anxiety, like literally. And I mean, he got hurt right when the playoffs started and he was just not on the roster last year.
That's true. I
talked about this at the time, but he came back from one of the injuries and then he took the comebacker off the hand and broke it in like his second inning. And it almost seemed like he was, when he came back out, they had the hand all taped and all that, and it just he almost looked like he was relieved. He was smiling and hanging out, and I'm like, I don't know. And I think David Price had the same issues, like, you know, I don't know. But well, I don't know
about Price than Sale. Sale always struck me as a pretty fierce competitor.
He was until like after the World Series, and he just wasn't the same guy. There was just something about him, and yeah. I could be wrong. I like to read the tea leaves, and I'm not always right, but yeah. So we got Walker Buehler tomorrow.
Yes, we do. Walker Buehler takes the mound for the Red Sox against Zach Littell. Littell is, I mean, the surface numbers are good, but when you sort of dive into them, just like Pepiot, I think this is a guy we could hit. I know Pepiot sort of settled down. In that first inning, we were having good at-bats. I thought that he was going to be an early exit. But the thing with Zach Littell, he refuses to walk guys this year, but he's having a problem with home runs and a problem with strikeouts. He does not like to strike guys out. He only got 52 Ks across 80.2 innings, and I think a home runs per nine of 1.9. So even though the ERA is 3.68 coming into this, this is a guy we can hit, especially with the way that we've been hitting. If these guys are hot and they go out there and do to this guy what they've proven themselves to be doing, I mean, Zach Littell better watch out. Walker Buehler is the question mark for me.
Yeah, that's the part that I'm concerned about. I mean, you know, I didn't think about this yesterday when I was talking about Giolito and us needing to revamp Fenway so we didn't realize he was there. But what they did is they brought all the kids up. He thought he was in Worcester. So it worked. He pitched really well. And it went obviously in our favor. I think with Buehler, the 36-pack is already on the way up there of Pumpkin Sam Adams. So hopefully he thinks it's October. But in all seriousness, bold prediction, I think Roman Anthony gets his first home run tomorrow.
Ooh.
For the exact reason you just said. Because if it's going to happen, it's going to happen against a guy like Littell at this point with the amount of hard contact that he's giving up and the home run problem that he has. But I could see the same exact issue happening with Buehler coming in here and just absolutely getting lit up. And it's one of those games like the other night where we're either down and we're crawling back or we're neck and neck the whole time. And then we all know how those games end. It's a one-run loss. I mean, gun to my head, I say we probably lose the game. But maybe he takes a sip of the bubbly a little early and, again, thinks it's October and it goes our way. We'll see.
Honestly, I mean, there's no reason to expect Buehler to have a good start tomorrow. And if I was on last night's show, I might have said the same thing about Giolito. But, you know, in hindsight, Giolito has been good in certain spots. And Buehler, I don't have my notes from after his last start, but I'm pretty sure he's got an ERA over 8 since the injury. So he hasn't looked really good. I mean, that Tampa lineup isn't robust. It's not one you should really worry about outside of a few guys. But, you know, that second baseman, Aranda, is really good. Yandy Diaz hits us extremely well over his career. I'm sure he loves coming to Fenway, and he loves it when we roll into Tampa or Steinbrenner Field this year. But I don't know. I would just like to be pleasantly surprised tomorrow with a 6-inning, 3-run start by Buehler. That would be a step in the right direction. And if it's the 4th inning and there's 5 runs up, I just, you know, I'm just going to be down on not only him, but Andrew Bailey for not being able to fix him. I'd like him to be the KG veteran that figures it out. So that's what I'm hoping for.
I know he has the focus for it. You know, like I said last night, Giolito and Buehler, these are guys who want to win. So it really is just an execution question. I can see this game being a bit of a slugfest, going back to one of those 8-6 type of victories or losses. I guess, you know what, I'll play the role of the optimist and I'll say, let's take another series against a division rival. Let's win 2. We'll go into Thursday with a day off and then see what we can do against the Yankees.
Yeah, we're in that series. We're getting freed, mm-hmm. And I'm not worried about Rodon. We hit him pretty well, and
yeah, we did.
I think he That was the first time we'd played them, actually. So yeah, we've only seen them once this year, but for whatever reason, we just hit them well. So I'm not real concerned there, but you know, so they've been pretty good this year. I didn't have them in the playoffs. So, and I think Tampa's going to win it. I think Tampa, gun to my head. That's the new saying. We're pro guns apparently here on the podcast, but gun to my head, I really think Tampa's gonna win the division.
I mean, they've been on a hot stretch. This team, this Rays team is playing great baseball. They were down, I think, in fourth place for a little while. They're 7-3 in the past 10. So the fact that we've even taken one game off them is reassuring. If we can take two, that's going to fill me with a little more confidence, tentative, but still. So any closing thoughts or should we wrap it up?
I think we're good.
All righty. Thank you guys so much again for joining us. We really appreciate the conversation. And hopefully we'll see you tomorrow for another great wrap-up. Win or lose, you know we will have a lot to say. We have been the Bastards of Boston, and we will see you next time. Take care.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365 because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.